did I really want to pay to go to this event? So that's where I started out. First thing is a disclaimer is I tend to wander when I'm talking, verbally and physically. So I am not a CPA. I am not an attorney. I've never played one on TV. If I say anything that sounds like professional legal advice, please do not believe me and check with your local professional. All right, that said, like I said, we're going to go through two things. Different sources to fund your deals. I'm just one potential source. There's a bunch of different ones out there. I'm going to kind of compare those a bit for you so you can kind of figure out where you should go when. At what time do you use what place? So like I said, when is hard money right? And it's not always right. There's a lot of times when people call me asking for a loan, and it's like, no, you should call so-and-so instead. This is where you're at. This is what you need to do. Then you got the kid who called me up looking for a loan, and I told him to go back and ask for seller financing, and he got it because he did exactly what I told him to do. I like kids like that. There's a few kids around like that that actually listen. So it's a little bit. I kind of told you a little bit about who I am. I'm a real estate investor. I started off as a landlord back and bought my first one in 2002. And that was the only way I knew how to do real estate investing. And by then, I was already a genius because I had read two books I bought at Barnes & Noble. So I already knew everything. Okay? The first thing I found out is I had no idea how to pick tenants. Then I learned when you don't pick good tenants, you have to learn how to rehab a property. But it wasn't until a couple years later I actually found out you could actually rehab for retail. And I'm kind of a slow learner. It was probably a couple years after that I actually learned about wholesaling. So I did it kind of backwards from what most everybody else does. But it also forced me to be creative, and it forced me to explore a lot of my different options that are out there for funding. So I have used every option that exists, I believe. Possible I missed one. I still use most of them. However, you know, nowadays I do have this one little option that I can use now that I never could before, which is called cash. Which is kind of nice at times. But the trick or the skill is knowing when do you use which option? What's the right time to use this choice? So, Kelsey, and somebody, could you help Kelsey? Because you guys... I'm not going to say you guys probably can't read that, but I couldn't make it any bigger. Can we get those handed out? Where's one of my volunteers in the back can help her out? Just hand one at the end, let them pass them down. Melissa will help you. All right, I printed this out. Kelsey is bringing them around to hand them to you to make it easy to read. Because I can stand here and read that, but I guarantee if I was sitting in the back row, I would not be able to read that. And I know it. So we're going to go through financing. We're going to look at it from two different perspectives. Okay? We're going to look at what we're going to call long-term financing, which I'm going to generally say is anything like 2 to 5 to forever. And then we'll do a page on short-term financing, which will be intended to be short-term, you know, typically a year or less. All right? And different sources for that. What they're handing out now, that is two-sided. I got the long-term on one side, I got the short-term on the other side. And yes, I wanted you to be able to take that with you. The one time you don't have to take pictures of the slides. All right, those are most of the way around. The front row can probably read that. So first thing, long-term financing. And this is kind of the order that I go through for our own personal deals. The very first thing I'm going to try to get every single time is seller financing. If I am buying a property from Joe, I'm going to do everything I can to let Joe make him payments. And it works sometimes. You know, not everybody says yes, but you never know until you ask. Honestly, up there in the red shirt, Connie was one of the first people I asked. She was a first, second, third, maybe about third. But she said yes. So I bought a property from her on land contract. Then a month later, I bought another one from her on land contract. But had I not asked the question, I never would have got it. Oh, and it was no money down, and she funded the rehab. So the great thing about talking with an individual, the seller or even a private lender, is all those terms are negotiable. So I'm going to pick on Connie because she's here. So seller finance deal was a duplex in Dayton. Connie was a motivated seller. She was done with tenants. And I was a young and upcoming motivated buyer. Unfortunately, I was also a motivated broke buyer. So I made Connie an offer. I don't remember what her asking price was on the duplex, but I offered her $30,000 for the duplex, and we would write the land contract for $15,000 if she would give me $15,000 at close so I could fix the duplex. And Connie was sufficiently motivated. She said, "That is a great deal." And we went over to our local title company, and we got it all done. And a decade later, after making Connie all those payments, an arsonist burned it down, and I finally made a profit on that property. It was an arsonist. Dude burned down three properties in the same morning. Yeah. Only one was mine. Fortunately, at the time, the tenant had literally moved out like 1 or 2 days before. So there was nobody living there at the time. Actually, had I insured it at market, at rebuild value instead of market value, I'd have made a killing. Because this was a 100-year-old duplex, three layers of brick walls. Yeah, it would have cost like $300,000 to rebuild it. Market value was 85, and all I got was 84. But it was still a good deal because I finally made money on it. So that's the advantage of working with a seller. Very flexible negotiations. Connie could very well have told me, no, I got to find my own money for rehab. But I asked, it worked. Can you get a seller to fund a second mortgage? Sometimes. I bought one property from a seller, and we put the mortgage on a different property. I bought the property on Hillcrest. We put the mortgage on Arlene. Why? Because I didn't want Hillcrest. So I took Hillcrest, and I wholesaled that to somebody else, who then they sold it on terms to another investor who still owns it and who is running around this conference somewhere. Fun things we get to do, bringing in sources of funding. Do you see how that funding happened? I got the funding from the borrower, from the seller, put it on a different property. The person paid cash for the property. Or did I sell that one on terms? I don't remember. But they in turn sold it on terms. So all this money moves around, the deals move around, people are just making deals with each other. So you can't always make a deal with the seller. Sometimes you get someone who's cranky like Joe who wants to go out and buy a Corvette and drive around the country, and he just needs the cash to do that. All right? So I got to give him cash. So now I got to reach out to somebody else. So it's a long-term hold. If I'm buying a rental property, I'm probably going to go to my local bank or my credit union, because although they are kind of the pain in the butt to get the loan done sometimes, they are the cheapest source of money that you have, except for your Aunt May, who really likes you and will lend you money at whatever her savings account rate is. Okay? So I'm going to go to that bank and credit union first. Now remember, the bank and credit union has the cheapest money. They are also among the hardest to qualify for. They look at these things like, what's your debt-to-income ratio? Do you have a JOB? Because we don't like self-employed people very well. You've got to hit all these qualifications. They want to know, oh, what's your credit score? Oh, your credit score is 600? Yeah, but it's just because I maxed out my Home Depot card to rehab this house and we refi with you. Then we're going to pay the Home Depot card off, and then my credit score popped right back up to 700 again. And they don't care. Because it's 600 today, by God, that's what they're going to go by. So it's a different world. So you've got to know how to work within that world to fit their parameters. So like me as a lender, if I know somebody, that's the path we're going to take them down, We'll make sure that that Home Depot, we find a mechanism to get that Home Depot card paid down to about 5% of the credit line so that their credit score pops up right before the bank goes to pull their credit so they can get that bank loan, assuming they fit all the other qualifications. So these are things that we work through with people as a lender. If for some reason I can't fit through all the hoops that that bank wants me to hit, and I still want to go on, I'm doing a long-term rental loan, I'm going to reach out to a mortgage broker. Now, the brokers can also go to the same banks and lenders, and believe it or not, they can go to the same bank and get different terms than what you got when you walked into the front door of the bank. They have different terms of going out the back door. Some time ago, I did a loan, and I went to Chase Bank, where I had a bank account, and I didn't like their terms, so I reached out to a mortgage broker who got me better terms that I liked, and when I got to the closing, it was with Chase Bank. Who knows? There is no logic sometimes. Now, if for some reason I can't go through the mortgage broker because they still have that debt-to-income ratio, that job, that other stuff like that, and I'm still looking for that long-term loan, now I'm going to go the DSCR route because I can eliminate some of those criteria along the way. DSCR only looks at the asset and the cash flow of that one asset. They don't care if you're leveraged to the hilt on these other properties or you don't necessarily have a job. As long as you got good credit and this asset will cash flow, you're generally good to go. Now, in all of these cases, except for the seller, for the bank, the mortgage broker, the DSCR lender, the properties have to be in good condition. And they actually, a lot of times they prefer them to be already rented, but that is not always a requirement. So frequently for people, this is the second step. Because most of us, how many people have actually buy turnkey properties? Already done and rented. Oh, two guys in the back and Joe who will buy anything that's a deal. So the rest of us are all buying properties that need a little updating, love, sometimes a tender little loving combustion, you know, deals like that. Okay, that's what I buy too. Although now I'm kind of the cranky old guy and kind of lazy, so light rehab. It's a heavy rehab, I'll give it to someone else who likes doing those. Wholesale it out to them. So the faster source of money. So you're buying a property that needs work. Those long-term lenders up there, they ain't going to touch it. So to get the work done, you need a short-term lender. So private lenders are fantastic. I am a private lender, but we're going to say I'm a private money lender with standards. Okay. When I bought the property from Connie on a land contract, I would never do that loan for somebody. So thank you, Connie. Because I had no money in the deal. I had no skin in the game. You know, had it gotten hard and I had a quitting mentality, Connie might have been screwed over. Okay? Fortunately, it all worked out well. Yeah, she knew where I lived and she knows my mother. Okay, so there's might have been some mitigating circumstances in there. And I'd been around the RIA for a couple, three years at that point, so we kind of knew each other. So she did things that as a lender, as a private money lender with standards, I wouldn't do. Now, with people that I've done a bunch of deals with, I might do what we call a crazy Darren deal. We might do something that looks a lot like Connie did. I just closed on one of those last week where I'm going to share in the appreciation of the property, but they didn't bring any money down because it was a really good deal and they just had too many projects going on and they were out of cash and equity until they got something sold and closed. So I'm going to help them do that. I'll make a few extra bucks. They'll still get a deal done they couldn't do otherwise. It'll work out well. Okay, so the private lenders. Nice thing if in private lenders, you're going to break those down into two categories. So what I've been talking about so far is kind of like your RIA private lenders. No. Let me back up a little bit. So your private lender like Aunt May has no idea what you do, how to do it, or anything else. She will just lend you money because she knows you, she loves you, she changes your diapers, all that kind of stuff. And that's where you're going to get your best terms, okay? A lot of people like that don't even know they could lend to you for a project, so you have to help them understand how to do that. And you need to take very, very good care of them because they are precious, all right? So you're going to have to step them through that. But a lot of them are thrilled to get 6 or 7 or 8% because their money market's only giving them 3.5%. Now, the risk you have, if you tell them you'll give them 10%, they're going to know what's wrong. What are you doing? Is it illegal? But if you tell them 6 or 7, that's reasonable and they'll do it. It's a weird thing. It's a different mentality. When you deal with a RIA person, they're like, yep, 4 points, 12%, 5 points, 15%. I'll do it for 2 and 10. You know, it's a different mentality. We kind of know what those market rates are, and we're going to go there. On the other hand, you don't have to explain to the RIA person how it works. They already know. But a lot of the RIA private lenders in the back room are kind of, they're more almost like a hard money lender because they're using a lot of the same standards, the same rules, and things like that. They just don't have a table out in the back with a placard that says, Dayton Capital Partners, we lend money. Okay, but they're doing a lot of very similar to what we do. Going on to the next one, your typical hard money lender. So now we're going to talk about, when I say typical hard money lenders, so first, we're not typical. But second, you got a lot of them out there like Lending One, Lima One, Chiave, and a lot of variety like that. They've got fairly rigid boxes that you have to stay in. They're more flexible than your bank box, of course. But things like, you know, credit is very important. Credit is usually not very important to your private lenders. Sometimes, but not always. Some will look, some get concerned. Your typical hard money, they look at, oh, you got 680 credit score, your rate in terms of this. Your score is 620, your rate in terms of this. Your score is 619, no. Just the way it goes. Me, I look at, oh, your score is 619. Oh, you maxed out your Home Depot card. You haven't sold your house yet. You have a perfect payment history. Rock on. Let's go. That's what's important to me. A lot of times you're like those national typical hard money lenders. Oh, they want that appraisal. So there goes $500-$600. Oh, and a couple 3 weeks. And all that time suck of getting there. And they want all the documentation, and their rates and fees are out there. And they like to, and they, this one, which as a borrower, drove me insane. Oh, we're only 2 points. Oh, and an appraisal. Oh, you have an LLC? Oh, it's $1,495 for our attorney to review your LLC. Oh, the closing docs? That's $995. Oh, we have a closing fee? That's $1,295. Oh, and we're going to charge you $35 for the credit report, $40 for the survey, and you've got to get these half a dozen endorsements on your title insurance policy that really mean nothing but make us feel better about giving you a loan. So it drove me nuts as a borrower because I went in there expecting, oh, 2 points, and all of a sudden now I'm paying five because it all comes up as fees that a lot of them don't disclose until you get, maybe they'll show it on the term sheet. A couple of them are kind of nasty. They show up on the HUD. You never even heard about it until you got to closing. And then it's a little too late. As a buyer and a borrower, one of them pissed me off so much, I walked out of the closing, told the mortgage broker where they could shove it, and told the seller I would talk to them later. So we actually I was able to find a private lender on that one. We closed it a few days later. So it's the way it is. So what we're doing is we're taking my 20 years of doing this as an investor, boots on the ground, painting things, walking through properties, negotiating with sellers, buying, selling, and doing all that stuff, and using that to accelerate how we can get your deals closed. So I'm able to help you analyze, especially for the new people, I can help you analyze that deal. I'll review your scope of work. I'll make sure that's good, that it matches what your exit strategy is. I'll look at it and say, oh, you should add this to it. Oh, you're going to sell this retail, this neighborhood? Yeah, you should have those quartz countertops in there. That formica ain't going to cut it. You know, oh, your HVAC, 12 grand. You should get another quote for that one. Oh, you got to do all duct work? Okay, maybe that one may not too bad, but that's still a little high. You should get another quote. and we're going to help people through that. Now, on the other flip side, if you are super experienced like Joe, he can throw up his deal at me. So I already know Joe, okay? He's already vetted as a borrower. I know he's good for it. He can call me up and say, hey, I got this property. Here it is. I got this scope of work. Here's what I'm going to buy it for. Here's what I think the ARV is. I can do a couple of checks, say, Joe, you're good to go. 5 minutes later, he's got a yes, and we can close in a couple of days as soon as title's done. So, for the record, the fastest I have done a closing from initial call to their signing at the title company is 2 hours. Now, that said, title was already done. Okay, this was a first-time borrower. I had never worked with him before either. So he had to go through all that personal background stuff. But title was done. Insurance was in place. All we had to do is insurance. They had to change the mortgagee clause. Title, they had to update the paperwork to show me. And I had to do all the background stuff I do on a person, plus their LLC, plus the property. And we got it done, the paperwork done, approved, and out in 2 hours. Signing. Please do not ask me to do that again. Routinely, we knock them out from zero to go, 5 to 7 days. It's pretty normal. Usually, if it's going longer than that, it's because there was a title issue, or the borrower isn't sending me my documents that I'm asking for. You know, when I ask you for a tax return, I want a tax return. It's pretty simple. You don't just get to ignore it. Now, on the other hand, you have to tell me I haven't filed a tax return in 3 years. We may have a little different conversation about that, but it's not always a deal killer. Okay? Constantine may not have filed his for the last couple of years because he's got a partner and the K-1's not right and he can't do this and the apartment deal is kind of, you know, but we can still get through it. Not always, but often. All right, so we're rambling. So the point is that I've been through this. I started in 02. I went through 08. I have plenty of scars from 08 to prove it. And we recovered from it and built up to where we are now. I've been down the road. I can help you down that path. So that's what we're here for. So the point is, you know, that experience, I was telling you, that's how we get these things done. You know, I'm not out there waiting for an appraiser. I have not called for an appraisal in 7 years. I have not needed a property survey out of 800 loans. I think I've asked for 2. And that's only because I used to be a surveyor and I can look at a property lines and say, yeah, we're good, no problem. And couple 2 we looked at, I was like, that one's pretty close. One was okay, one was not. But the one that was okay by about that much. So we check. Title companies. When we go there, I know how to read a HUD. So we routinely are pulling, especially with retail-oriented title companies, we're always telling them, take that endorsement off, take that off, we don't need that fee, remove that fee, I'm not paying you to do that, and write down there. Because as a borrower, I don't want to pay all those fees. So as a lender, I want to protect you from those fees. And I see a lot of times someone will call and ask me, and I'll look at the HUD's like, well, why is this on there? Why is that on there? Well, it was on there when I got there. Well, who asked for it? Well, I don't know. Ask your lender if they needed it. No, they didn't need it. Well, why did the title company put it in there? Oh, because that's their default template. You know, it's like going to a restaurant and say, oh, by default, we charge you for dessert whether you need it or not. Okay? So we're going to look at 2 things when we're going to approve somebody for a deal. I'm looking at you as a person. Are you going to pay me back? I'm looking at the deal and says, does this deal fit for you? And if you don't pay me back, will the property make me whole? That's it. Everything we ask for, everything we're looking at and asking you to give us is to support answers to those questions. Okay? And when I look at your deal, if the deal sucks, I will tell you so. And if I see ways to make it better, I'll tell you what you can do to make it better. All right, so we've kind of skimmed through some of this stuff already. 22 years, I've been at it for a while. My team has got experience. You know, Joyce, you know, she's got 40 years in title and mortgage. So we've got in-house expertise to do things. Kelsey, who does draws for us, she used to work at a home inspection company for 4 years. So not an inspector, she was in the office. So she's not an inspector, But if Bill ever retires, I will make him an offer. You know, so we've got the people in the house, they're there to help you. And of course, I'm always there behind them, so if they get something they can't handle, we can get it taken care of. And when you're calling in and asking questions, you're probably going to talk to Rod. Rod has spent his entire life in mortgage. Okay? So we're able to help you. Okay? We got that. We talked about experience already, getting it done fast, knocking things out for you. Oh, by the way, I didn't say this up front. You guys can feel free to raise your hand and ask questions at any time. I am not one of those other speakers that has a pitch, okay? But when you raise your hand, wait for someone to bring you the microphone. Oh, wait, this one's not being recorded, so we still need the microphone so everybody else can hear. It is being recorded? Well, they can edit that comment out then. All right, so as an experienced person, and the scars I have, if there's a problem that comes up on a property, I can almost promise you I have probably seen it and overcome it at least once. And I've probably screwed it up a couple times on my own before I figured out I shouldn't do that anymore. Okay? Sometimes I'm a little slow learner on things like that. But once I've learned it, it is good. The other thing is, because of the path that I followed, I can help you do the same thing. I remember when I started back here in the back of the room 20 years ago, I had two rental properties that lost money, and I was virtually broke. Okay? Now we have a rental portfolio that can pay our bills, and I'm a lender. And strangely enough, in the front of the room, which I'm still not comfortable with. So, but we can help you down those destinations you want to go to. Oh, you want to get enough that you can quit your job? Great, let's help you down that path. Oh, you just want to pick a property, you love your job, but you just want to pick a couple properties up periodically along the way so that when you retire, you have that extra income? Great, we can help you do that too. You will never retire. You're like me. Okay, and keep in mind, as a lender, I want to lend to you. Your job is to make it easy to lend to you. Okay, I want to get it done. I don't get anything from telling you no. This is no fun. Oh. Hey, I brought totally side note. I need one of those. Okay, I covered almost everything on here.
I have a question.
Okay, we got a question. Oh, way back.
Yes, sir. My question for you is, say I have a commercial building of 10 units, but I want to come to you, but I don't have the 25% to put down. How could I be creative with you?
Or is this in Columbus?
Yes.
I may have heard about this one already, haven't I? Well, first thing I'm going to ask you, so you're looking at 10, you're trying to buy it, right? So you're trying to buy a 10-unit property, but you don't have 25% down. So my next two questions are, how much money do you have? Do you have 10%? Do you have 20%?
I have 10% down.
Okay, so now we're still 15% short.
Correct.
Okay, now what other properties do you have?
Single family house, paid off.
Bingo. What's the value on that house?
$185,000.
Okay, if we put a loan on that for about $125,000, what's your purchase price on the apartment?
$400,000.
I think that using that house would probably get you up to the down payment you need.
Okay.
It's way more fun. I will take equity out of houses. I will trade. You can give me gold for a down payment. Silver. One guy offered me a Ferrari. But he also wanted to be able to get it back when he paid it off. Unfortunately, that deal never closed, which took all the fun out of it. Someone offered to bring me bourbon, but that would have been an awful lot of bourbon. Mm-hmm. I see you over there.
So Darren, I'm more interested in giving you money than taking it. But
where were you this morning?
I was there this morning.
Okay.
But on the offhand, I find myself on the other side of this is 75% LTV where you want to be?
On the purchase, I want to be at 75. I'll blow the numbers up there in a bit. On the purchase, I want 25% down, and you're going to start at 75% LTV. Now, remember, you've got to fix it and rehab it. By the time your rehab is done, I expect your LTV to be better than 70%. Okay. Otherwise, we're going to question why you're bothering to rehab this property in the first place, because you're not making any money. All right? Now, sometimes the answer is, this house is right next to one of my rental properties. It's been a pain in the butt for 5 years. I don't care how much I pay for it. I just want the hassle gone. So I want to control the property. Okay, great. Put a little more money down. My ratios will work. You'll be good to go. Transactional funding. We can do that. So a lot of you, how many people buy from wholesalers? Okay. So if that wholesaler wants to double close, we can fund that for them. And if you're buying on assignment, we don't care. We know how that works. We can fund that too. So you can buy it from your wholesaler. They can assign you the contract. I can fund you directly. No problem at all. Oh, and we still do it in days. So all those wholesalers out there that think they need cash buyers are shooting themselves in the foot. Because when you got someone like me who can lend on assignments and double closes, how many more buyers are out there for those wholesalers? You know, I bet there's a bunch of you in this room that may not have some cash, but they don't have all the cash they need to buy the deal, like standing in the back of the room. But there's a way to leverage that, take advantage of it. And occasionally I do a crazy investor deal. I am not doing any more of those for the rest of the year because, well, I get too much going on. All right, so like I said, these are the things that matter. The deal, you got to have down payment. You've got to have experience. You got, you know, some cash in the back pocket because you have monthly expenses like utilities, maybe insurance, interest payments. We do like to collect those. So you got to have some of that. I do look at your credit. Like I said, score is not so important to me. But if you've never paid anybody back in your life, I don't expect you will start with me. So we look at that. I'm looking at your payment track record. That's what matters. And believe me, I can read a credit report. I can see those Home Depot balances go ping, 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 ping. Okay, he's rehabbing. And I'll talk to you. Hey, what are you doing? You're rehabbing a house? Yeah, I'm rehabbing. Okay, that makes sense. And we're good with that. Okay, the things we'll say no about. If you lie to me, it's over. That's done. Oh, I've done 100 wholesale deals last year. Great. Your tax return says you made $9,000 gross. I don't believe you. I have $100,000 in the bank. That LLC isn't yours. Yeah, he was fun. I want you to have skin in the game. Sometimes I will do a crazy daring deal and I'll do something otherwise, but I want you to have skin in the game. I found that when people have skin in the game, they are far more motivated to make everything work. Of all the deals that I've had go bad, the one thing they had in common, none of them had skin in the game. Now, that said, that doesn't mean everybody that didn't have skin in the game went bad, because some of them did really well when I was doing things like that. But of the ones that have gone bad, that was the common factor in all of them. All right? If the deal sucks, obviously we're not going to fund it. I'll tell you the deal sucks. I will tell you why it sucks. And I will try to tell you how to make it better. Some deals are just unfixable. So you can't make them better. But if that's the case, I will tell you that too. Oh, if you start telling me how to do my job, it's over. Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't be looking at that. You should look at that over here. This is more important. Are you the lender or are you the borrower? Please explain. So those kind of things. Like I said, I kind of explained some of those. Then you got the dodging guy on his background check. He's like, yeah, how's this? Hey, you got anything skeletons closet I should know about? Nope. So I run a background check. Is there anything I'm going to find that would concern me? Nope. What about that fraud conviction with the VA? Oh, that. You know, it was so old, if he'd have told me about it and explained it and there was something reasonable, I probably would have overlooked it. I might have made him put more money down or something else like that, make me feel better, scrutinize a few other things, but it wouldn't have been an automatic deal killer except that he tried to hide it. Okay? We've kind of hammered on that already. Talked about that. We talked about that. Can you tell I'm not always good about following the slides? Okay. Here you go. I've loaned to convicted felons. They paid me back. A former drug dealer paid me back. A couple of those I made put bigger down payments, by the way. People with horrible credit, coming out of bankruptcy, had foreclosures. We were able to work them through and get there. And all of them performed, got the deal done, made money, and paid us back. So never think because there's something in your background, don't automatically disqualify yourself in your own head. I was sitting down right next to somebody in Coree September, so 2 months ago, in Columbus, and I just happened to sit next to him by chance and talking about solving a deal, and it's like, oh, well, this is easy. You just need a loan for about 40 grand. You got plenty of equity. Oh, but you won't lend to me. Well, why not? Well, my credit score is 610. That's not a disqualifier. Oh, but I thought it needed to be at least 620. Who told you that? Oh, well, that's what those guys want. I'm not those guys. So never automatically disqualify yourself because someone else maybe told you that, or just maybe you think, oh, he'll never do that. Ask. I can't promise the answer will be yes, but sometimes it is. Talked about that. Like I said, this for me is the big part. Everything we ask you, every question we ask you, every document we ask you for is to support these two questions. All the background checks we do, all the research we do, it's supporting this. Is the deal good enough to fund, and are you good enough to lend to? Are you going to pay me back? And if you, for some reason, you don't pay me back, can I take the property and make myself whole? That's it. I really don't want your property, believe me. There you go. And like I said, just because we say no on a particular deal doesn't mean it's no always. Sometimes just this deal doesn't work. Go find a better deal. Now, the advantage then is at that point, I've already done the background checks and kind of the stuff on you if you've done an application. So I can have you already cleared and vetted like Joe is. And now all you do is come back and say, hey, I found this other deal. Here's the numbers. Let's go through the numbers. Hey, the numbers on this one work. Go into the system, put in the deal, and let's get you closed. It's pretty simple. Said, we want to lend it. Make it easy for me. We want to lend to you. Just be honest with me. Tell me what's going on. Let me help you. So the question is, do you want someone who can help you on your side? Or are you going to be the Walmart? Are you the Walmart shopper that's going out? Oh, well, this guy's going to charge me 25% less and $5 less on my fees. Great, but he has no experience. He's a 1-800 number. When you have a problem or have a question, he can't help you. So there's a trade-off there. Who do you want on your team? So questions. I like questions. It's much easier for me. Let's see. You probably got a... How many... Does everyone have the private money flyer that has the blue one that has the terms and stuff on it? If you don't, raise your hand. We'll get someone to... They're in the back there. Oh, look. A whole bunch of you snuck in without getting one. At least I watched you sneak in. Hi, Sandra.
I have a question. What markets do you lend in?
Mostly I'm lending in... my area, Southwest Ohio, Northern Kentucky's kind of like a suburb of Cincinnati, so we lend there. Some people have dragged me all the way into Tennessee. So we're doing Tennessee. I may have done one in Alabama, did one in Georgia, done a couple in West Virginia, one in Indiana. I don't advertise or market there, but sometimes someone from Ohio moves to Tennessee and wants to do a flip. Or they come from Tennessee and come here and they see us here, and we're okay with that. I can analyze deals down there too. Now, if you're in Tennessee, I don't have a roster of contractors I can tell you to call and get another quote from. Okay? Use your local RIA for that.
Hey, Darren, if we have, if we've come across a property, it's like for us, it's a don't want her, And we decide to wholesale it, but then we want, we find somebody who does want it. Can we, like, connect all the pieces together?
Yeah, just send them over.
So that, you know, we can get paid as the wholesaler, you can take care of them. Okay.
Yeah, we help people do that all the time. And sometimes I find it amusing. Wholesalers call me to see if I want to buy a property. And I look at the property and say, oh, wait, that one needs 75 grand of rehab. I don't want to do that. That looks like work. And then I'll look down my list and go, oh, let's see. Oh, Tim, I just sent a payoff letter off for him. He needs a project, and Tim likes heavy rehabs. Here, you should call Tim. Here's his phone number. Tell Tim I will fund the deal for him and go put it together. So I'm going to help connect wholesalers up. I'm going to stay out of the middle of that wholesale part of the deal. I'm just going to fund the deal in the end. That's all I'm going to do. So, like I said, we're here to help make connections. Well, they'll bring a mic up here. She's running. Oh, someone else got it first. We have plenty of time.
Sorry.
How much time do we have? 15. Oh, I talked more than I thought.
Just a general question, whether short-term or long-term, what are the best ways to vet funders, you know, people in your industry?
Sorry, pull the mic up just a little closer.
Oh,
I can't quite hear you.
Okay. No, no, I was just wondering, what are the best ways for us to vet people who are in your business, whether on the short-term or the long-term side, to see if, you know.
Oh, how do you vet lenders? There's a couple ways to do that. One is ask around, especially if they're part of your RIA. Where are you from? Pittsburgh. So you have, is that Digger Acre? That's Acre. So around Acre, people are going to know, especially if they're vendors, talk to the people in your RIA. See who's worked with them. That's the very first thing I'm going to do. Other than that, I will look in things like, oh, are you recording mortgages? Are you doing loans? And Google is a wonderful tool. Google lender name and look for the reviews, look for comments. If you're if you're also concerned, one of the things I do when I'm vetting contractors, I just look, search their name in the court record. Here you go. That's kind of what I do when as a borrower. That's how I was vetting lenders. It was mostly reputation. And if it was someone that wasn't local, I was looking where they said they were doing things and make sure they really were.
So I ran into somebody that from another group that told me that they have given you money to help your reserves, and you know they invest in you basically.
I'm sorry, it's a little muffled. I don't think it's you. I think it's the mic.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay, so I ran into somebody that from another group that said that they have worked with you where they're an investor, and they have given you money that goes into your available. And your available loaning amount of money you can loan.
Yes, that is correct.
So how does that work?
It's pretty close. That was the presentation I did this morning. So the very short version, and this is short, is once I've loaned the money to somebody like Paul over there, I'll make the loan to him. Now, Paul and a few dozen people out of here, they're going to tap me out in no time. So I make those notes available to other investors, so they can come in on the back end and collect interest off that note. I can explain that more if you want to stop by our table out there, and I give you more of the details and explain more of that to you. By the way, Paul does that. So.
Hey, Darren, I have another
question. Yes,
Sandra. What type of properties are you mainly lending on?
Most of the properties I lend on it's very heavily single family, number one, followed by 2 to 4 units after that. I will occasionally do an apartment building, and I'll occasionally do a commercial property. However, I will limit how many apartment buildings and commercial properties I will do, because like these guys doing note investors on the backside, I only have so many people interested in them. So I've kind of got a soft limit out there what I can do with that. But single 1 to 4 families all day long, no problem. All right, hey, there it is. Christina's getting her exercise. Omahawi.
Yes, hi, Darren. So, thank you so much. My question is, Like, the inn is huge, you know, and are you, do you fund in any area, everywhere, or are you, like, picky? I'm getting, you know, ready to rehab one house in the inn area, and I would love to know if you're, like, you know, picky in some areas, or you just, what do you, you know, look at?
Are you just talking about neighborhoods, Mahali?
Yes, yes.
I've funded everything from the hood where there's gunshots up to, you know, Class A neighborhoods in Kettering. Now, on the other hand, some of those hood properties we may look at and decide that it's not worth the risk because the amount of rehab that it needs exceeds its ARV frequently. And especially around the Dayton area, there's a few areas left like that where you literally, if you fixed the house the way it needed to be fixed, you would take a loss trying to sell it. So for that I would disqualify because the deal doesn't work. But we've got a bunch of areas in like Dayton and other cities where it's starting to gentrify. So areas that were rough a few years ago or 6-8 years ago, they're getting better. And we're doing a bunch of loans in those neighborhoods, places like Oxford, and he knows what I'm talking about. So I won't disqualify it just because it's a low-end neighborhood or anything else like that, but we are going to look at that deal, and we're going to look at those neighborhood characteristics. So if you're in a, call it a war zone, and we look at that block, and on that block, there is 6 burned-out houses, 2 that have been bulldozed, and 2 houses that are standing. You want to rehab one of them? I'm probably going to tell you no. All right, we're looking for hands. Don't make me let you go early. She's going to bring you the mic. Hold on a second. She's going as fast as she can. Yeah, but the rest of the people need the mic to hear you because they can't hear you in the back of the room.
Thank you. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me in the back? So when you look at neighborhoods, even though the numbers may make sense to us, you're vetting that the neighborhood would support the support what's being done.
That I think it will.
Yeah.
I mean, we're projecting into the future, and we could both be wrong, but I'm taking a good guess based on experience and what I've seen happen in neighborhoods where they've gentrified, where they've gone up, gone down, and all the rest of that.
Okay.
Now, and I know from experience that when you've only got 2 good properties on a block, it's really hard to get that done, even because when you're done, hey, it's a beautiful property. Well, nobody wants to live there because look what's out the front porch. Right. Now, if you bought the whole block, then, hey, now we could have fun.
Hey, so yesterday we were checking out, we drove down to Dayton, checked out a number of 10-unit buildings, a couple 40-unit buildings. Is that something you would find?
Put it right on your chin. Trust me. Put it on your chin.
Yesterday I checked out a couple 10-unit buildings and a couple 40-unit buildings in Dayton. Is that kind of a deal too big for you? Or what
no.
What would you require, you know, rent roll, or how would you look at that deal differently than us?
We'll have to look at that specific deal. Are they rehab projects? Are they cash flowing?
They're cash flowing, you know, but they would immediate improvements, but they're already, you know, 90%.
So the question is, do you need funding for the improvements or not?
It would help, but it's not necessary.
So that's where we have to sit down and run through the numbers. The question is, are you better just going straight to a long-term lender on that? And getting the financing that way and just doing the improvements out of cash flow? Or are you getting a great deal because you can close fast, in which case using someone like us might help? Or like the one I funded for someone about 2 weeks ago, they qualified at the bank, but they didn't have, after they went to the bank, they didn't have enough money to put on a new roof. So they came to me. We gave them the loan for that. They're putting on the new roof. As soon as they hit the 6-month seasoning, they're refinancing out. And they'll get they'll actually get an appreciated value. So instead of being 20% down with the bank initially, they're actually going to turn out to be about 5% down, depending on where the appraisal comes out at. That was also in Dayton. So, like I said, if you call me, I'm not going to tell you that I am always the right lender for you. Just like there, I'm going to ask the question, say, where is, remember that grid we did the first time that I gave you guys to take with you? Where is the right lender for your deal? And we'll talk through it. And sometimes I'm going to send you, say, hey, listen, call. You want to do a 10-unit over there, and you do this, and you live there? Yeah, call Brad over at Park National. He's the right person for that. Or call Eric over at Abbey. Or, oh, you're going to do that? Call DJ. He'll take care of that one. So we'll hook you up with other people who can help you out and do things. All right?
Hey, Darren. My question is about the transactional funding. Is that simultaneously, like, closing back-to-back? How long is that open?
It's transactional, one-day dough.
Okay. Well, I was just saying
that. It doesn't have to be the same day. It could be back-to-back days.
Okay. Because I had a deal I just did. It was a guy, he was sounding like an end buyer. But right after the closing, other people was hitting me up like, hey, is that property still available? Like, he was wholesaling it. So was that transactional funding?
No, he's probably just wholesaling it. Because did he close with you?
Yeah, he closed with me, yep.
So you got your cash, so you're done.
Okay. So I was just wondering, was that?
No, transactional funding is typically for, it's usually used for a wholesaler. And it's going to be something like, Constantine found a great deal. However, he's so busy with his apartment building, he just doesn't have time to work on this deal because his contracting crews are busy. He's already tied up time-wise. On the other hand, we'll pick on Joe. Joe would love to have another three-unit brick ranch apartment. Okay? So, Constantine's going to put the deal together, get it under contract, get it all set up, and call up and say, hey, Joe, I got this great deal. I don't have time to work on it, but if I can make a few grand on it, you can have it.
Do I get to look at it before I make a decision?
No. Joe can't look. No. He can look at it. Now, depending on the amount of spread on that deal, it may be okay for Constantine just to assign the contract to Joe. On the other hand, I have wholesaled a couple properties where my spread was $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. Do I necessarily want the seller and the buyer seeing that spread up front? Okay. It depends. Some of the buyers don't care. You know? I don't care how much I'm buying it. I don't care how much you make. I bought one from a guy who made $50,000 on the wholesale. I don't care. It's more power to you. It's a good deal for me. Go find me another deal. Because my numbers worked. But in that case, you're going to use the transactional funding. So let's say you're going to buy it for $100,000, and you're going to sell it to Joe for $150,000. And Joe is thrilled because that thing's going to throw off cash like magic. So Constantine will borrow $100,000 from me. I'm going to charge him a couple grand for the service. Okay, we'll get a closing done. Joe's going to come in. He's going to buy it for Constantine. Then they're going to pay me off my $102,000. So I made $2,000 for a day. Is that a good day? My IRA likes those days. Okay. Is Joe happy? Is Constantine happy? Well, guess what? If Constantine was disgustingly, he's a cheap guy. He's like, $2,000? I'm not going to give you $2,000 for a day. I'm just going to assign the contract to Joe. So he assigns the contract to Joe. And everybody goes to the title company. And Joe may not quite be as ethical as some other people. And Joe looks at the seller and says, hey, we have this contract that's between you and I. I don't like this $150,000 price. How if we write a new contract for $125,000? And they're like, oh, that'd be great. We'll write a new contract for $125,000. And where does that leave Constantine? Okay, this is not a theoretical example. I watched this happen exactly. I was in the title company in the next closing room while that happened. And yes, the buyer in that one was a known slime ball. The wholesaler didn't know it. The wholesaler had called me for the transactional funding and thought my $2,000 was too expensive to protect his $50,000 profit that he never received. Had he done the transactional funding, he would have made $48,000. And interestingly enough, that was the wholesaler's first deal, and I have never seen him again. Well, apparently charging people to use your money was a problem in his eyes. No, he was just cheap. He had the whole $50,000, I'm going to make $50,000, and $48,000 wasn't enough. And, you know, that's what happened. So transactional funding has its place. You know, for like me as a buyer, I don't care if you're making $50,000 as long as the numbers work for me. I mean, the last one we bought, we made 50, you know, I know the wholesaler made 50 grand on it. I knew before the closing, I just congratulated him. Hey, great deal, dude. Go find me another house like this one. I like that one. He hasn't brought me any more houses. Oh, and the fun part on that one was a friend of ours saw us get the house and convinced me to give him sell the house to him for, you know, another 5 or 10 grand or something. So I didn't even end up with a house. Fun stuff. All right, I know we're close to the end of time, so just a couple minutes, maybe time for one or two more questions. Otherwise, I'll have to bore you with a story. Oh, I can do that for you. That was way back in the beginning. Did I pass it? I did. There it is. That's us. Joyce and Kelsey are both out at the table today. Rod is off today. We let him go away. And if you care, he's watching. He went up to Cleveland to watch the Browns game. Yeah, I know. All right. If you have any other questions, I will be out at the table. Kelsey and Joyce will be out at the table. Ask questions. For you guys who want to be more on the note side, come on out there. I'll get you some information on that too. Help you out that way. But at least now you guys know what I'm doing on the other end before you come back and buy a note. What?
You were going to tell us a story.
Oh, which one was it? I've already forgotten which one. Oh, no, we don't want to do those. Yep, it was just a threat. All right, in that case, we're about 1 minute early. You got a whole extra minute for your break.